Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of May, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Take a quick look at TPA, or Trade Promotion Authority, as passed by the U.S. Senate on Friday evening. It needs to go to the House of Representatives and then off to the President's desk if passed out of the House for a potential signature. We'll take up the weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Check also with Dan O'Brien at K-State University. He'll help us understand the biofuels industry and what's happening both on the ground in the Midwest and in Washington, D.C. Some U.S. EPA regs may be due this week. And it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers at the CME Group as they finished up for this day. July corn at 355, down a nickel. September 362, down 4.75. December contract 4.5 lower, and the March contract down 4 cents. May corn on the settlement price down 3.75. Soy complex, July beans 1.75 lower. August at 913.25, down 3. September at 905, 2.5 lower. November at 904.75, down 2.25. January at 912.25, down 2.5. That July contract, by the way, at 922.5, down 1.75 to lead the soybeans. Bean meal futures down 230 at 301.90. Bean oil up 50 cents at 32.14. Chicago soft red winter wheat 21.75 cents lower, $4.93.5 the settlement price. The hard red Kansas City at 524.5 in the lead option July harvest month, down 22 cents. Live cattle futures from the CME Group at 151.77.5, 35 cents lower in the June. August at 150.57.5, 12.5 cents lower. And feeder cattle on this Tuesday finished the August at 219.75. That was up 75 cents. September 218.55, up 55 cents per 100 pounds. Lean hogs at June contract, $83.32.5, down 40. And the July, 75 cents lower at $82.97.5. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
Outside markets at this hour are trading July crude oil at $58.13 a barrel. That's $1.59 lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.90.2, down 4.9. And the gasoline on the wholesale or RBOB price at $2.03 is a nickel lower for the day. Natural gas at $2.82.2, down 6.5 cents. And ethanol futures at $1.56.6, settled 0.9 cents lower. Dow Jones Industrial Average down about 256 points. Trade at 17,968. Gold futures around $16.75 lower at $1,187 a troy ounce. And the dollar at 97.415 is much stronger today, up 1.305. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Scattered showers this afternoon. Those will come before 3 o'clock. Not very far away. Showers are likely and possible. A thunderstorm between 3 and 5, and then scattered showers and thunderstorms after 5 o'clock. Mostly cloudy, high of 78 degrees. This afternoon, tonight, scattered showers, some thunderstorms before 11 p.m. Central Time. Then a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3 a.m. Mostly cloudy and a low of 65. Tomorrow, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. That before, after 7 a.m., partly sunny, and a high of 81 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon, the 26th day of May 2015. We're joined now by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, to discuss the marketplace. Wayne, it appeared to me that not a lot of changed over the day from this morning's early trade to the close of the day today. Did you see anything different or new?
No, basically, we drifted just a little bit lower in some of our prices when we were talking this morning. Basically, the dollar, just a tremendous, it's a little higher than it was. We're up 131 ticks here today, just about 1.3% as we're talking. And that, of course, is negative the grains. And, of course, the crude oil, which has generally been supporting going into the last week, down, $1.63 to as much as $2 during the day. So the two outside factors, along with Janet Yellen last Friday talking about the interest rates probably beginning to raise sometime before the end of the year, put the weakness in the euro because of the Greece situation and the strength in the dollar because of Janet Yellen's comments.
I think I made note that the dollar against the Japanese yen was very strong and maybe one of the strongest levels it's been at for some time. Of course, they're one of, if not the largest importer of U.S. corn. Do we have any concern about corn exports at this time?
Well, actually, the corn exports today were pretty good. We continue to see some of the exports staying strong there and actually picking up a little bit. So that's a good thing. As far as the export picture was concerned, though, it did look like the wheat's weakness partially came out of a little better forecast for the Russia and the Soviet Union over there. That partially along the way and the idea that they would be back in as big export competition for us if they can get that rain and the extra bushels over there.
Yeah, so some of that working into the weakness of the wheat market in Chicago, it was down pretty sharply. Were there other things that were happening? Rainfall had been a problem for wheat. Is it not so much now? Are they with rain makes grain? What's happening there?
The world market never really followed the Chicago rally as far as the cash price. And when last week's lows were taken out today, the funds come back in as sellers pretty hard. If I looked at the weather over the weekend, I would have thought we would have saw a little strength from all the flooding in Texas, Oklahoma, and around the different areas that way that supposedly you would think would have flattened some wheat fields with the amount of rain that they had out there. Talking down into the Arkansas area and that chatting with Phil this afternoon, and he said that disease is starting to look sort of bad in some of the wheat down there. He doesn't personally have any wheat out there. He only has a couple thousand acres, but he's saying the wheat as he drives out and around the farms that he's starting to see some disease show up.
Speaking of the rainfall in that southwestern area of the United States, wheat and then soybeans as well today in the weekly outlook, Darrell Good discussed just a little bit about Kansas being behind at this point in their soybean planting. I don't think we'll see them catch up very much this week when that's released this afternoon. I know it's outside of the primary soybean seeding areas, but it can make a difference, especially over the long haul, if fewer acres were to show up.
Well, if you're averaging, guessing 46 bushel of the acre, and you take a million acres out of that area, it's 46 million bushels. So, that does start adding up, and it takes another 50 million off here, 40 million off here. And, we've got spots here in Indiana that were just basically got done planting yesterday with beans, north of Crawfordsville and over Darlington. So those areas, and there's areas, just 45 miles north of Champaign, and there's a lot of areas, in the Mid-South that have not got their beans planted yet. So plenty of time to get those in, but not off to quite the great start that everybody is saying. So, and I think that Jerry Gehlke sort of brought out the fact today that it looks like a lot of the weather premium has pretty well been taken out. We might have to add a little weather premium back in because it isn't ideal everywhere.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us here on this Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Just one quick item in the news. This one came before the Memorial Day weekend, and now the National Pork Producers Council, among many other agricultural organizations, is urging the U.S. House of Representatives to move quickly to approve Trade Promotion Authority. That's the legislation that the Senate passed on Friday. TPA defines objectives and priorities for trade agreements the United States negotiates and establishes and consultation and notification requirements for the president to follow throughout the negotiation process. Once the trade negotiations are finalized as a deal, Congress gets to review it and vote it up with a yes or no. No amendments on it. Congress has granted TPA to every president since 1974, with the most recent law being approved in August of 2002. It expired June 30th of 2007. The Senate has, of course, approved TPA. It now goes to the House of Representatives. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming, and you can find a way to sign up for our free weekend newsletter. That's all at willag.org. It's public radio for the farming world. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You know, the trade has turned its primary attention to the soybean crop being planted across the United States, but that doesn't mean it has fully discounted last year's harvest as a market maker. This year, the United States Department of Agriculture expects about 1.8 billion bushels of soybeans will be used within the U.S. borders. This is more than last year, and it appears USDA is on target with its projection. The pace of domestic crush has steadily picked up as the fiscal year has passed. University of Illinois Ag Economist Daryl Good says the pace needs to pick up even a bit more to make the target.
To reach the USDA projection, the crush during the last 4 months of the marketing year needs to exceed that of a year earlier by about 8%.
The NOPA crush estimate for May is scheduled for release June 15, and that'll offer more insight into domestic usage. The other primary point of usage is the export market for soybeans.
The USDA projects that the U.S. soybean exports during the current marketing year will reach a record 1.8 billion bushels, 9% more than the previous record of last year. With about 14.6 weeks remaining in the marketing year, an additional 78 million bushels of soybeans need to be exported to reach that goal. That's an average of about 5.4 million bushels per week.
The last 5 weeks have seen exports above 10 million bushels each. It's very likely, thanks Daryl Good, that USDA's export projections for soybeans will be easily met. This brings him to the ending stocks figure, or the number of bushels to be left over at the end of the fiscal year in September. Now, that number will be calculated, and it could result in an adjustment of the size of last year's crop. And then there is this year's crop.
Until very recently, few concerns have been expressed about the 2015 soybean production season. Planting has proceeded at a pace that exceeds the previous five-year average pace, and expectations have been for acreage to exceed intentions reported in March. The recent weather pattern, however, has generated a few issues. In particular, the area of extreme rainfall in Texas and Oklahoma that has extended into southern Kansas and parts of Arkansas have raised a few concerns about the timeliness of planting and the potential for some prevented planted acres. The focus is primarily on Kansas due to the combination of the slow pace of planting so far this year and the magnitude of soybean acreage intended to be planted in that state.
For the U.S. as a whole, there is some measurable yield loss as the percentage of the crop planted after May 30 increases. For the period from 1986 through 2014, the percentage of the crop planted after May 30th has ranged from 9% in 2012 to 66% in 1995 and averaged 34%. with 45% of the crop reported planted as of the 17th day of May. The percentage of the crop planted after May 30 this year, that's not likely to exceed the average of the previous 29 years due to the rapid pace of planting, especially in the northern growing areas. The impact, if any, writes Daryl Good in his weekly outlook posted online to Farm Doc Daily, of the extreme wetness on the magnitude of planted acreage of soybeans should be revealed in the USDA's June 30th acreage report. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon, the 26th day of May. Let's check the agricultural energy markets with Dan O'Brien. He's at K-State Extension, that's Kansas State, and joins us once a month to take up that marketplace. Thanks, Dan. We just finished up a conversation with Daryl Good, and he was concerned a little bit that the trade has not looked quite thoroughly enough at Kansas, and we'll start someplace not with the ag energies, but with the sowing conditions there, in particular for soybeans. What can you tell me about how far along they are this week as compared to last week?
Well, not to be flippant, but you know, unless we have high moisture floaters, there's not much progress going on. we've had a lot of rain, and really reminds the person of what happened in the Middle Eastern Corn Belt back in 1993, when we had, you know, rainstorm after rainstorm bring an El Nino type of a year, and just had really delayed activity. So we had crops that in much of the state that were planted early. Thankfully, a lot of the irrigated corn was planted, but since then we've been pretty much stymied in terms of any planting activity. I'm looking at a number for May 17th. Kansas soybeans at 17% planted. Normal average is was 31% on the date on that date, and you know, we haven't seen a lot of progress since then in a lot of areas. So even our we're indicated to be 78% planted right now as opposed for corn as opposed to 82, and for grain sorghum we've been making some progress, 6% as opposed to 10, but it'll take a week or so for fields to dry out. Still it's probably too early to get into any type of an overall panic, but certainly is, as Daryl no doubt pointed out, still sure an issue on the margin that can affect acreage and expected production to some significant degree. And I guess we'll wait and see how the rest of the year comes out. But forecasts so far have been for a relatively cool summer. So, you know, again, no doubt a person remembers what we've seen in the past, and you hope we won't be dealing with late maturity problems for corn, for soybeans, for grain sorghum, whatever, as we head off into fall. If that be the case, well, we'll have lots of bushels, but we could have some real quality problems.
Speaking of quality problems, winter wheat tends to really not do well with a lot of rainfall as it goes through heading, and disease can quickly take over a crop. What's the condition there?
Lots of disease problems, stripe rust. I guess wet, cool conditions are the textbook encouraging case for stripe rust development and other diseases that we have that tend to be problems out here in Kansas anyway, such as wheat streak mosaic, aren't caused by these conditions, but they're helped along by them. So again, to be judicious and talk about to try to peg what the overall damage will be from this is a challenging thing, but we're not in a situation where we have bright sunny days weeks on end with the moisture that we are getting being used to good advantage. Rather, it's helping to encourage the disease development and other problems. And maybe as an ag economist, when you're looking at these things, you always say, well, time will tell. And he just keeps repeating that. But we really are trending downwards, I think, to to some degree, and I think that's a fair and judicious statement with regard to our production potential, and for sure what crops we do get with this type of moisture won't be high protein, great quality wheat crops. They'll be crops that struggle. So probably the people watching all this aren't the folks in raising soft red winter wheat in your neck of the woods or hard red in my country. It'd be the folks up in the Dakotas that are looking for a high quality hard red spring wheat crop that they can blend in to help what will probably be some low protein hard red winter wheat crops and winter wheat supplies anyway as we head off in the latter part of this year.
Turn your attention now to biofuels. That's what we're hoping to discuss yet this afternoon. How's May going to turn out for both ethanol and biodiesel as a production month, do you suppose?
About three quarters of the way through the month, it looks like that for both biodiesel and for ethanol, regular ethanol production, that the lower input prices, particularly for corn, are helping to spur anticipated profitability. And again, for ethanol in particular, look at low input prices and some strength that we've seen here in ethanol product prices themselves. Both those have enough of a strong positive effect on at least as we'd anticipated on ethanol plant budgets that by our numbers you're looking at something akin to 15 to 20 cents per gallon in profits so far through this month, and that's happening at the time when we've seen distillers grain prices kind of weaken again. They're following the corn down to some degree anyway. So overall, if we actually end up and carry through at about this level for the month of May, well, you'll see one of the most profitable ethanol months that we've seen since about October, November of last year. So that's good news, at least moderately good news for ethanol plants. You're not looking at 45, 50 cents a gallon or a dollar a gallon as we've seen in some of the really best of months, but 19 cents a gallon profit on ethanol plants sure better than 15 cents loss, and they recoup some of the losses they had earlier in the year and live to fight another day.
Biofuel plants are doing well, and then what do we know about U.S. EPA and its expectations for releasing, I think, maybe a look at what they're going to do once they release the final estimates for 2013, 14, and 15 for RFS numbers?
I know more of rumor than I know of fact on this, but we read in the Ag Press at least one train of thought that the EPA may end up and not necessarily cap or limit ethanol production anymore, but rather, if anything, move towards their original goals. And at least that was an Ag Press news report that I had read. If that's the case, then that's all positive. And I think standing back and looking at this, part of the challenge we had back in 2012 or so with a short crop were great concerns that we would have enough production to actually meet those ethanol goals and not crowd out other uses such as exports and whatever. Well, here we've had 13.8 billion bushel corn crop, 14.2 last year, and now who knows what we're going to get this year. It doesn't look like it's going to be small.
Hey, thanks so much, Dan.
Thanks.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Blueberry Cheesecake Day. Perhaps the first written cheesecake recipe goes back to the first century A.D., when Marcus Cato, a Roman politician, wrote an essay on agriculture called De Agricultura. In it, he describes a recipe for a small sweet cake, often given as a temple offering, that contained 2 pounds of cheese well crushed in a mortar. By the way, cream cheese was invented in 1872 by William Lawrence.
He distributed cream cheese in foil wrappers from 1880 under the name of the Empire Company. You may know it better as Philadelphia brand cream cheese. On this day in agricultural history in 1862, Isaac Babbitt died. An American inventor, Babbitt created an alloy widely used for friction-reducing bearings. In 1908, the first major Middle East oil strike was made. A gusher of petroleum rose 50 feet above the top of the drilling rig and smothered the drillers. And in 1999, Waldo Lansbury Seaman died. Seaman was an American inventor who is credited with the invention of vinyl. PVC is found in hundreds of products, including garden hoses and imitation leather. By the way, vinyl is the second most used plastic in the world. Seaman held over 100 patents, and his technical expertise led to his discovery of three other major new polymer families, including synthetic natural rubber, an oil-resistant synthetic rubber. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday. I'm Todd Gleason from U of I Extension. Don Day joins us to take a look at the weather forecast. Let's start with the rainfall across the Midwest. Looks like it's pretty widespread across some of those areas, especially in the northwestern Corn Belt, that needed rainfall, and not so bad for a good portion of Illinois, maybe on into Indiana as well. Where will it move through and to?
Well, it's moving east-northeast at a fairly good clip, and you mentioned the areas that are doing best, Minnesota, portions of Wisconsin, Iowa, getting some good rainfall, and we'll get some more. And we're going to see other systems like this about every two or three days coming through most of the Midwest and Corn Belt. And we're going to see some of the areas, Todd, that have been dry or drier getting a little more wet. This includes some areas of the southeast United States, which has been looking at a dry May. And there's a small respite for the soaked areas of Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas.
And then if you go into next week and the week after that, you see continued rainfall, warmer temperatures. What kind of conditions?
Well, I do see both. I see a weather pattern that quite honestly looks, we'd like to call it Goldilocks. It's just right. We're going to have off and on chances for rain. Temperatures are going to be getting a little bit warmer as well, not all at once, but gradually easing up as we get into the first 10 days of June. We don't see the systems coming through as staying long, so I don't think anyone's going to get too soaked, but the frequency of precipitation chances looks to be about right as we go through the first half of the new month.
We have talked about these warm periods on and off since January. They have been warmer than normal several times. Do you see that coming, or has that part of the process been broken now?
Well, when you get as cold and wet as you've had in the western and central United States, you tend to have southwest winds and warmer temperatures where we are. And with a little bit of that shifting a little bit more to the east, the warm won't be as warm, so to speak. And everything we're seeing for June, the 30-day outlook is for temperatures at maybe a little bit above normal, but nothing that would reflect any potential for excessive heat.
Turn your attention now to other growing regions across the planet. Do we have any primary concerns in the northern hemisphere that we should address?
Well, we need to take a look at, and this is something we'll probably be watching throughout the course of the summers, over into western and southern Asia. India is experiencing some very hot, dry weather right now. And with the development of an El Nino, we're getting more and more confident about, that does tend to cause some different weather there and drier conditions. And that's something that will be evolving through the summer. And I think what's happening there now is an indication of what may come for that part of the country for the rest of the summer season.
Thank you so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Helps us wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.